everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. I'm Ben Pearson, and today we're going to review a movie called Outland, starring Sean Connery. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler Brands, the editor-in-chief of the Solar Sentinel. Tyler, how are you doing?
Hey, Ben. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, sir. How
today,
are you?
Whenever
yes, today.
Whenever this is going
on. Whenever the people actually listen to this.
How was Comic-Con?
Comic-Con was fantastic. I actually went to my first Comic-Con, and I really enjoyed it. I was there covering the event for Geek Tyrant. We put up a crap ton of coverage on geektyrant.com.
Yeah, you did.
If you guys are interested, go check that out. So let's get right into the show, shall we? The first segment of the show is I've decided to call it, to kind of rename it, Media Consumed. I believe in our inaugural podcast last week, I called it This Week in TV. I kind of like the idea of calling it Media Consumed. So from this point forth, it's now known as Media Consumed. It's basically a segment where we talk about television, and then we'll move on into our review of Outland. So, Tyler, what have you been watching lately?
I've been watching a couple things, but I've been spreading them out every podcast. This week, I want to bring up the show Jim Henson's The Storyteller, and there's a pretty interesting history behind the show. It used to show in like 1989 on the Jim Henson Hour, and a half hour of the show would be dedicated to this, the storyteller show. And they use like the Jim Henson puppet shop as like the basis for building these puppets that appeared in this, what was half live action, half puppet retelling of like classic folk tales. And there was also like another season that featured only Greek myths. And both of those are like available on like Netflix. That's where I was watching them at. So, I mean, they're easy to, you know, catch up on.
That sounds absolutely insane. I've never heard of it before in my life. And that sounds completely obscure and totally random. I mean, not that I would expect anything else from you, but about this thing? What is going on with this?
It was just something I came across while searching the genres of TV and stuff, and it popped up. I was like, wow, I've never really heard of that. But like, I was always watching like Jim Henson and the Muppets stuff when I was a kid. And so when I started like researching it and seeing that it was part of this Jim Henson Hour, I kind of remembered, you know, watching it as a kid, like on like Fridays or whenever it was on Sundays.
Right.
But I didn't really remember, like, I kind of remember the scary parts because the opening is kind of spooky because it's real dark and ominous, like his dark crystal stuff and his labyrinth stuff. It's kind of similar to that. Like,
okay.
He tried to do, like, adult-oriented, not adult-oriented, but a little more grown-up and scary things for kids.
Okay.
And a lot of the folk tales are real interesting. They're, like, from Russia or Europe or all over the world. And, one is, like, the soldier and the other one is like the boy you did not fear, and like there are all these real obscure folk tales that are told with live actors and puppets, depending on like if it's a monster, it's usually a puppet, or
sure.
If it's so it's just kind of interesting to see like this time capsule of what Jim Henson was doing and trying to do with the creature shop is what it's called. So
right.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, it's really good acting. I think John Hurt's in the first season as the storyteller, and Jim Henson's son uses the voice as the dog that's a Muppet, so it's kind of cool.
Okay, all right. I'm going to have to check that out, because like I said, I've never heard of that before in my life, so.
Yeah. It's pretty entertaining.
Cool. Anything else that you've been watching recently?
I just started John Adams, the HBO miniseries.
Oh, okay.
A really emotional first episode, because I'm a big like history guy. I minored in history, so American history is kind of like something I really enjoy learning and reading about and watching on TV, and Giamatti does a pretty good job. I've only seen part one though, so I can't say anything for the entire series, but it gets pretty emotional at one point, so it got me to like double take on my emotion check, so
okay.
It has a pretty good effect on me, so yeah.
Breaking you down piece by piece.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Nice. It was funny because I actually ran into Paul Giamatti at Comic-Con. Like, literally, I bumped into him on the street in like, a crowd of however many, 160,000 people or however many were there. He just happened to walk right past me, and I kind of brushed past him and looked at him and was like, holy crap, that was Paul Giamatti. And then I never said anything to him. We just kind of walked and went our separate ways, but it was funny.
That sounds like a love-torn lovers kind of thing.
Me and John Adams were fated.
John Adams.
As far as on my end, man, I really haven't been watching much TV because I've been at Comic-Con this whole last week. The stuff Pat, who joined us on the podcast last week, is my roommate, and we have been going through old episodes of Boy Meets World for some reason. I don't know why. They've been – it's like how you and I, for those who don't know, Tyler and I actually went through X-Men, the animated series, like last year or something like that, just because it was on TV, just to kind of relive the experience from our childhoods, I guess. And that's kind of a similar thing that Pat and I are doing right now. The series is actually coming to a close, or I guess it's already ended at this point. I just haven't seen the final episode again, but we've just kind of been going through and watching old Boy Meets World episodes, you know, just in our spare time. It's not anything that we're like really heavily into, and you know, we leave a backlog of them on the DVR pretty regularly, but that's just something that I've been watching lately. And then I finally caught up with Mad Men, finished all of season 3 on that, and then the first episode of season 4, the premiere, just happened this past Sunday. Nice. So Pat and I watched that as well, and I don't know about that show, man. I'm sure we'll talk about it in the future when we have Pat on again. But that show, I never really got into it as much as everybody else did. And you haven't seen any episodes of it, correct?
No, I really want to watch. I want to catch up. Like,
yeah, I mean,
it's intrigued me ever since it's come out. I've just never had the time to sit down and watch it.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of go through and catch up before this season started, and kind of just made it, with like a week to spare or something. So I would recommend watching it. It's definitely worth watching. Just as far as like story and stuff goes, there's not a lot there. That's not true. There is a lot happening, but I've just been spoiled by Lost is what it is, because with Lost, there's so many complex things happening. You're forced to pay attention to every single frame that comes on because, you know, it just connects with you in that way. And your mind is like constantly churning to try to figure out, you know, these kind of mysteries and things. Mad Men, I'm not going to give anything away for you, but there is a mystery kind of at the center of it, but that mystery is revealed, as the series progresses, and within the first 3 seasons, basically. So once that point hits, you're kind of like, okay, that's been answered. So now what do I have left? And, you know, some could argue that it's just an atmospheric period piece where it's all about the relationships between the characters and stuff. And if that's all that there is, I'm fine with that. I'm just wondering if I'm missing something that everybody else is seeing that I'm just not seeing. So I'll have to talk.
I think it's just supposed to be like badass.
Yeah.
Like Don Draper just going to town on the 60s.
There definitely are some badass moments, and there are some episodes. Every season there's a couple episodes that just freaking elevate it beyond anything else that happens that season. Like, you know, there's a I can't give it away for you, but there's an event or something that will happen that just freaking raises the bar, and everybody's like, holy crap, and it just kind of like shifts the entire tone of an episode or two, and like introduces random storylines and stuff. So it's definitely worth watching for those of you who are like Tyler and haven't started watching it yet. I would definitely recommend going back to the beginning and checking it out. If you have to, you can probably start at season 4 and watch a little bit of it. You will be confused, though, because there is a lot of ground that they covered in the first 3 seasons, obviously. But it's not something...
Yeah, and you miss out on the characters.
Yeah, exactly. The show really is all about relationships, and I do enjoy the show. I'm making it sound like I kind of hate it, but that's not true. I'm not sure that I'm seeing the same show that everybody else is seeing, if you get my drift. But
Right. Well, you know, as long as Christina Hendricks is still in it, I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah, she is. So, why don't we move on into our review of Outland?
Yes.
Why don't you start? What did you think about this film?
I was instantly intrigued when I saw the summary for it. I just kind of thought, all right, Sean Connery as he was wearing like that astronaut mask. So I was like, wow, I've never seen Sean Connery in this kind of piece before. You know, you've seen him in the fantasy movies, you've seen him in the action spy movies, you've seen him in like Indiana Jones movies, but you've never really seen him in like a science fiction backdrop where you're like, this guy's bringing the Connery-isms to other planets. You're just kind of baffled by that. You're like, this guy's traveling around in a rocket ship across the solar system, just, you know, tapping women on the ass and you know, heavily and smoking and just really cool stuff. So I was, and then it said something about, I can't remember. I don't know where I got this idea in my head, but it was like a Western too. So I thought he'd be like a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, it just kind of got me excited. But as it turned out, it got to be more of like a cop drama in space, in the solar system. Mm-hmm. Not in space, like blackness of space, but it takes place on this moon, the Jupiter moon.
Yeah.
And he kind of plays this security officer, cop, policeman that tries to keep the peace on this factory. They're trying to, you know, dig for metal. I don't know. I wasn't real specific. They weren't really specific on the details. I guess some type of ore that powers something on Earth.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure James Cameron stole something from Outland, and it's just I don't know what those were my initial thoughts on it. What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I similar to you, kind of was intrigued, especially by the cover of, you know, the DVD and that kind of stuff, the poster and everything. It's like Connery kind of half shaded, and he's got this shotgun in his hand, and I'm like, okay, this like sci-fi Western thing. I see what's going on here. Ultimately, I liked the movie. I didn't love it, and I definitely didn't hate it. It did come out in 1981, so we have to kind of put it in context with what else was coming out at the time and how movies were even made back then, you know, for us to kind of fairly judge it. It moved a little slowly for my taste, but that's just because, you know, that's how most films were paced back then, I think, especially sci-fi films. Weren't exactly all frenetic and ridiculous like they are today. You can look at the Star Trek movies for an example of kind of, you know, more pondering sci-fi and things like that. You know,
which ones? Newest one, the Abrams one.
I know that you're gonna give me crap about that. No.
I'm actually. I would like a specification.
Well,
Abrams one or like the Picard. Patrick Stewart ones.
No,
because those are both kind of like the same kind of effects and space.
I would say the Abrams one, and you know, we're not going to get too heavily onto this, but I would say that the Abrams one is a lot more action packed and not nearly as kind of ponderous as, especially Shatner, the Shatner films, the early Star Trek movies. Those like way more exploration heavy and just kind of. Explore a lot more philosophical ideas. So that's the kind of framework that Outland works in slightly. I mean, that it's not very ponderous. It's not that slow moving. It's not like the first Star Trek, the motion picture, where there's a 45-minute tracking shot of the Starship Enterprise or anything like that. There's definitely some action, and there's some really good action in Outland, surprisingly.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, like I said, I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. Would I recommend it to people? If you dig Connery, definitely. And then if you can kind of handle these movies, then yeah, absolutely. I mean, you just kind of have to know what you're getting yourself into with a movie like this.
Sure. Now the best. I mean, one of the aspects of the film that I enjoyed was like the space atmosphere. Like like you were saying, there's a certain atmosphere in the Abrams Star Trek, like that's, you know, space isn't as big and expansive when you have a ship that goes, you know, 80 light years a second. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But in Outland, it's like a realistic look, like what the 80s thought was a realistic look at what the future may hold for mankind. It's conquering of space. Like it took a year to get from Jupiter to Earth, and like you had to go into a sleeping spell to get back, or else you'd go crazy on this ship heading back to Earth.
Yeah.
And I just find it intriguing that people were actually writing these scripts, and you know, like 2001: A Space Odyssey, which I'm currently trying to watch. Any type of like, even the Star Trek: The Motion Picture was kind of like a realistic look at what space travel could be.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as ridiculous as, you know, with like, I guess Star Trek's a bad example because they use like light speed.
Right.
But, you know, just the isolation on this moon and then this like these pressurized chambers and these narrow hallways and these dark, smoky, like bar rooms and, you know, just like space overhanging and like almost like death is outside, because if you step outside this factory and or this like colony or whatever you want to call it, you know, you're dead.
Yeah.
And so the crime is so much more sweet, because like it's happening and you know everyone is there, but you can't do anything about it because like nobody can leave, but you have to find this evidence or else everything could just turn into bedlam and people start killing each other on and going crazy on this moon.
Yeah.
And I love movies like that that are like, the atmosphere is part of the suspense.
Yeah,
I think.
Definitely. And like the being confined, like you were talking about, being confined to that area just ups the stakes, because, you know, it's not like you can just commit some sort of crime and then peace out. Like, you know that whatever happened, and those people, whoever may have committed whatever atrocities that there are actually still among you. So,
yeah, there's no getaway vehicle, because like these ships come in at a specific time. There's like a huge counter.
Yeah.
That when the next shuttle's coming in, it's like he just knows that the killers are going to be on this next ship, and he's just waiting like 48 hours waiting for these guys to show up.
Yeah.
And it's like it's enough to drive you crazy, because there's no way for him to get away from it, you know, unless he kills himself.
Right.
You know, have to face this next threat somehow.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like suspense.
Yeah, have you ever seen High Noon with Gary Cooper? You know what I'm talking about? The Western?
I have not, and I'm ashamed.
It's very good. You should definitely check it out. But the kind of Netflix summary of this movie compared it to High Noon in space, and that's like absolutely accurate, because it's the same type of thing. You were just mentioning there's this big counter, this big clock, essentially, that just counts down the arrival time of the ship that is coming in near the end of the movie. And Connery's character discovers that the guys who are going to be on this ship are essentially coming to kill him. So it's the same type of thing in High Noon. Gary Cooper's character in High Noon is, you know, knows that at a certain time these guys are going to come busting into the town to get him. And the thing that I found most interesting about both High Noon and Outland was the fact that the main character, chooses to serve the common good and do the right thing at all costs, even at the cost of his own family, essentially. It's very black and white as far as that goes, and you know, you don't really see that too often, especially nowadays. You know, movies are a lot more complex, the psychology behind it and everything. You know, audiences don't like to see people who are just good or just bad. You know, you've got to have these kind of shades of gray in there. And I feel like Connery's character really is just like a genuinely good guy, that he's just been kind of kicked around and, you know, moved from station to station. And he's a good police marshal, but he, you know, he has these expectations of him to kind of just like, you know, turn a blind eye. And he just gets sick of it. He gets sick of this reputation that he has and decides to take a stand for once, and then refuses to back down no matter what. And it's always interesting for me, regardless of, you know, popular conception now with these kind of more complex characters, it's always equally interesting for me to watch a character who is just absolutely 100% dedicated to whatever cause that they're supporting and refuses to back down from it.
Yeah, I liked how you said shades of gray in his character, because obviously not the Outland character, because he's genuinely good, but while I was watching it, it reminded me of The Offense, which was another Sean Connery movie where he was that cop that was hunting down the child molester.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah, and he's like a cop in England or London or wherever he was, and he has those moments where you think he may be a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just kind of like, he's like running the line between good cop and like he's a criminal. Like he like swerves back and forth between his thinking because he's seen so many of these crimes that he's actually he's starting to actually like or think like the criminals. Like he doesn't know why, and he's driving him insane because he doesn't know why he's attracted to like these young teenage girls like these criminals are, and he's like sick of himself because he's thinking this way. And so he takes it out on the criminals and the criminal that he eventually interrogates in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the movie on a whole is kind of weird. You have to keep up with it. But as far as the character is concerned, like Connery brings out like a different side.
Yeah.
Like usually you see him in like these, you know, he's like real arrogant in the Bond movies, or he's like kind of he's arrogant in all of his movies, but he's like. It's interesting to see him outside of that element, like that action movie or like a franchise like Indiana Jones, where he's like a lovable character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or like a father figure in, you know, Highlander or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you kind of see that he's a really good actor and that he can pull off these strange, tormented characters.
Yeah.
And he wasn't tormented in like the Bruce Wayne definition of the word, but he is kind of troubled that he can't. He's fighting between getting his courage to stand up to these drug pushers, or he could just fall back and be like the rest of the cops and just kind of make money and live on this base or whatever with his family.
Yeah. You definitely see that, those kind of decisions, you know, rolling around in his head. You see the thought process there, and that's a sign of good acting, you know, that he doesn't just rely on his kind of arrogant badassery that he brings to every other role. This one is a little bit of a different side to him.
The movie, there were some parts where I was like, I don't know what's going on here. And there were other parts where it was like really boring because he was reading a computer screen.
Yeah.
And you had to read it. Like you were basically reading what the computer was saying to him. And there were just like long bouts of silence where he wouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
And he would just like walk around and like load his gun or, you know, just kind of like meander around the base, like,
yeah,
you know, show that he's there and he means business, and all the workers are like, "Oh no," but they don't ever say anything, and you're just kind of like, you're kind of like a security camera. You're just kind of watching things happen.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about the workers not saying anything, that brings up one point that I wanted to mention. You know, we talked about this movie being kind of a mix between sci-fi and Western. That is never more clear than in those sequences where he walks into the kind of kitchen area, which basically doubles as like an Old West bar. I mean, it even goes as far to have a revolving door, you know, like a swinging door,
right,
you know, that John Wayne would have walked through or something like that. And a lot of the doors in this movie are set like that, which is, you know, direct contrast to something like Star Trek, for example, where it's like, you know, got the sound where like the go in and out and stuff, and it's all futuristic. This, the setting is futuristic, and like the space, the set design is pretty good actually for 1981. Yeah. You know, it looks okay, and the futuristic stuff, you know, definitely works. It doesn't look terrible. But then you have, you know, something that makes little to no sense with these swinging doors, and it's clear that the only reason they're trying to do that is to kind of evoke the imagery of Westerns, you know, from the past. But
I didn't really see Western. I saw more of like more realistic technology. Like they're like, oh, we don't have sliding doors or sensors yet, so we're just gonna make them rotating.
Well,
like it's basically like the technology they had in the 80s. Only in space. That's kind of what I thought was interesting, was like they didn't advance science to meet their needs. They said, okay, like if we somehow got to Jupiter now today, this is probably what the colony would look like. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but you can't tell me that you didn't think as soon as walks through that door that everybody like who's drinking and being kind of raucous inside that room just shuts up and looks and turns and looks directly at him. You can't tell me that that's not straight out of, you know, 50 different Westerns that we've seen.
Yeah, it definitely is.
But you want to know something really interesting? The guy named who is the writer and director of this movie is named Peter Hyams, and you might not recognize that name, but I was just looking up his IMDb, his kind of filmography.
Wait, let me guess. Did he have anything to do with Dune?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, continue.
But he has directed a lot of movies that we've seen, surprisingly enough, and ones that you're a big fan of,
All right.
if I'm not speaking out of turn. So here we go. You ready for this? This
Yes.
is kind of his greatest hits as far as I'm concerned. Time Cop, 1984, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Absolutely love it.
Sudden Death, 1995.
Oh, jeez. Another great film. Check out both of those films. Continue.
End of Days, 1999, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I haven't seen that yet.
And The Musketeer, 2001. You remember
I remember that being all right.
And then the most recently, the one that I've seen is A Sound of Thunder, which is Ben Kingsley. You remember that movie? It's like, it's essentially a sci-fi original movie, but it actually came to theaters very briefly. It's based on a Ray Bradbury story, I think. Anyway, it was just amazing to me. Not amazing, but it was just interesting to me that that Peter Hyams has, you know, been a guy that we've kind of been familiar with his work for quite some time, but I didn't realize that he was the same guy who both wrote and directed Outland.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That guy should retire now because that is a great filmography.
Well, interestingly enough, I'm looking at his future project, and Outland is in development on IMDb Pro. I can't look at the details of it, but from what, you know, from what that insinuates, they're planning on remaking the movie.
Wow. Will Connery reprise his role?
I seriously doubt it, considering he's retired. But
yeah.
But that would be pretty awesome, actually.
Definitely, yeah. Man, oh, that would be kind of interesting to see, because we're in a whole new generation of movie making and science and technology, to see which route they take. Are they going to take the realistic look or technology look as they did in 81? Are they going to be like, oh, we got to make this look sleek and, you know, super new and science that doesn't even exist?
Yeah.
Route that, you know, people will see in 3D, I assume.
Right, yeah. and this movie, did it remind you of Total Recall at all? Speaking of Schwarzenegger with End of Days, I got a lot of Total Recall imagery out of this. I mean, obviously Total Recall came out in 1990, so that was 9 years after Outland. Wow. But
it's that. I thought it'd be a lot older than that, Total Recall.
Yeah, 1990.
That was first movies. No, it reminded me a lot of Dune. That's why I mentioned if that guy had anything to do with Dune, because just the I don't know what the phrase I'm looking for, like the space silence mm-hmm. of this movie was kind of I kind of remembered Dune, although Dune takes place 8,000 years in the future, so it's kind of hard to compare them as far as like a science fiction film, but as far as like the feel and like the imagery, and maybe it was just like the 1980s, just the way it looked, like the grain of the film and the
mm-hmm.
When you do like a overshot of the landscape,
yeah,
you know, you can kind of see that somebody composited that image in a certain way.
Yeah, absolutely.
They didn't have a camera outside Jupiter's orbit, so
right.
you can just kind of see like you know, it has the same type of, I don't know, like movie-going experience, I would say.
Yeah, and I mean, also, did you notice all the models and stuff that they used for the kind of exterior shots of the space station and things like that? That reminded me a lot of Logan's Run. I saw Logan's Run for the first time, I think, last year or something, and that movie, while it presents some interesting ideas, definitely doesn't hold up just because there's so much model work, and it's so blatantly obvious that it was models, that it just completely takes, you know, modern cinema goers just completely out of the experience because of how blatant these models are. And Outland, I mean, Logan's Run came out in 1976 and Outland was in 81. So they definitely learned from the kind of the techniques and stuff in Logan's Run as far as those exterior models and stuff goes. Like there's a couple sequences in Outland where a character is traveling downwards in an elevator and like the camera just kind of booms down with the elevator at the same time. And it's really obvious that it's a model, but it actually looks okay. Whereas in Logan's Run, it's just like you almost fall over laughing with how ridiculous it is. So Alan wasn't nearly to that level, but it's pretty clear that it was made in 1981. We'll put it that way. But, you know, I don't hold that against it by any means. It's just something I'm pointing out.
I don't know. What did you see as far as Total Recall references or Outland references in Total Recall?
I didn't even mention that, actually. I brought up that point but didn't actually go into it.
I brought it back.
The exploding people inside the spacesuits.
Oh, yeah.
there was a lot of kind of exploding people in Total Recall, just like whether it be in some sort of dream sequence or not. Just the same type of kind of atmospheric confinement that you were talking about in the very beginning, where, you know, it takes place on a kind of essentially a moon base on Mars or whatever, that, you know, if you shoot a hole in the glass or something, you'll get sucked out, and that kind of, you know, the same type of things that happened in Outland. The atmosphere and the kind of setting is very, the circumstances surrounding where they are and the kind of consequences to their actions are very similar in Outland and in Total Recall. But
yeah, I like the procedural drama, cop drama, that if you take away the science fiction, Outland is basically a cop dealing with drugs and a doctor as his sidekick, like an autopsy doctor.
Yeah, I actually liked
like
her
CSI
like,
stuff.
I liked her character a lot. The kind of sassy doctor, she had a little spunk to her, and she was, I don't know, normally I kind of can't stand characters that are clearly written like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're clearly
stereotypes.
Yeah, they're conceived for no other reason than to be a little bit of like a banter machine with the main character, basically. But for some reason, this one didn't rub me the wrong way. I really enjoyed that actress and her performance and that character overall. I actually liked that a lot.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines in the whole movie is when they were in the squash court and she was like talking to him while he was sitting down, and she's like, she was done talking to him about the case or whatever, and she's like, "Do you want to go get drunk?" And he's like, "Yes, yes, I do."
Yeah, that was pretty great.
I've never had anybody ask me, "Do you want to get drunk?" Like, you're completely sober. You've just played some basketball or something, and then like you're just sitting there recovering. All of a sudden, your friend's just like, "You want to go get drunk?" And you're just like, "Yes." Like, it's actually a point of like that night's goal.
Yeah.
Just get.
Yeah, that was. I enjoyed their relationship.
It kind of seemed a little forced again, where she just showed up at the very end. Not to spoil anything, but I'm spoiling it now. The movie's 30 years old. She just kind of he's walking down the door. He's pursuing the threat, and like the door opens, and it's her. All the people on the moon base.
Right.
It's her. That shows it's a friend, and he's just like, "All right, I need you to do this and this and this."
Yeah. I mean,
like, well, that's good because you would have been dead.
I believed it though. It's one of those movie things that only happens in movies. But I did kind of believe it within the circumstances of her character. I thought that they had done a good job kind of establishing their, you know, loose friendship and things like that. That I was like, okay, I can believe that. The same thing with the sergeant, the new sergeant coming in, and you know, even the doctor, Lazarus, I think her name was, she makes some comment about like, "Oh, here comes the cavalry. It'll be, you know, better late than never," or something like that. You remember the black sergeant that shows up, and he Connery kind of goes to him for help when he realizes that the threat is on the way, and he's asking him who he can count on. And the guy is like very reluctant to commit to his cause, and doesn't, you know, he says that we're young, we have families and all that stuff. And Connery's like, "Oh, I have a family." And then the sergeant eventually kind of comes around at the end, and you know, that's another one of those kind of movie cliches or whatever. But I thought that both of those, the payoff was earned. I thought on both of those, there's a lot of other movies that do that same move per se a lot worse than that. Like where it's like, "Oh, okay, this is ridiculous. Why would this character even want to come and help this final character at the very end? That doesn't make any sense based on the way that they've been treated earlier," or something like that. But I feel like those relationships were built up well enough to make that believable.
Let's talk about his family for a second. They appear in the first, I don't know, 3 minutes, and then he just comes home and she's like, "Yeah, that first day, I just can't deal with it. We're leaving." I don't know where they go. I guess they go to another moon.
Yeah.
But And then he speaks with that kid later in the movie over the video phone or whatever
right.
it is. And, I mean, I talked about this earlier. That kid couldn't be more than, 13 years old, but they made him speak like he was three. And it was just like, Mommy says you're not coming home for a long time. It's like, Daddy, why are you working as a cop? Like, he doesn't – I mean, he's clearly in middle school because he's wearing, like, braces. He's got, like, the puberty voice. I mean, he's lanky. He's not like he's got baby fat or anything. And it's just like – he's like, oh, gee. Like, Connery was probably glad that kid – went wherever he did because he couldn't deal with that. He couldn't deal with that. Like, he's like, do your homework and don't talk to Dad because you're a disgrace to my family. And it's like I could understand. He was mean during that whole conversation too. Like, he didn't want to talk to that kid. So I was like, yeah, I can see where you know he's being babied too much by his mom. She should let him hang out with the dad for a couple of days. You know, take your son to work.
Yeah,
and see what it's busting druggies on the moon base. Instead, you're at home still drawing with crayons and you're freaking, you should be studying science or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
It was funny because Connery made some comment. Like, one of the first lines that you see Connery deliver in the movie is like, he said something of the kid is complaining about having braces on his teeth. And he's like, how long do you have to keep these on? And Connery's like, long enough, he makes some sort of comment and he's like, oh, I got to keep these braces on my teeth. And he's like, you'll lose some teeth if you don't shut up or something like that. Like, makes some sort of comment that, like, he's going to bash his kid's mouth in if he doesn't, like,
oh, I would too. The way that kid acted? Yeah. To grow up. He needs a reality check. He needs to be thrown out into space just to realize,
Yeah.
It's a dog-eat-dog world, boy.
Yeah.
I like the race is still the only way to fix your teeth, like, 200 years in the future.
Well,
like,
speaking of freaking teeth, did you see the wife? She had the most busted mouth of anyone that I've ever seen. That's not
with Mary Connery, man.
That's not so...
I'll give her the last word. I'll give it to her.
So you're saying it's an implied history with the character?
Yeah, like, they just write these characters around the person Sean Connery. They're like, oh man, what if we put Sean Connery in space? Like, oh, that's a great idea. It can be all Outland.
Yeah.
I really didn't like the end. Like, the ending was good, but then the very end, he's, like, typing a message to his wife.
Yeah.
And, like, give me a kiss. Give a kiss to Johnny for me. And I'm like, clearly Connery was so badass that he wouldn't deliver those lines, so they had to, like, think of a way. So, like, oh, we'll just have him type a message instead of, like, phoning up the wife. Because he's like, that boy is, like, 15 years old. I'm not talking to him like that.
I love that concept that Connery refused to deliver those lines in spoken words. So they're like, we've got to get this across somehow. Okay, just type it up on screen and we won't even have a voiceover or anything, since he clearly refuses to compromise his character in that way. Because it really did. He made some sort of wishy-washy comment to the wife in that final transmission about, like, oh, I can't wait to sleep with you for a year
while
I travel, all the way back to Earth. And I'm like, get out of here. He wouldn't have said that. Nothing that we've seen so far would indicate that he would talk like that to his wife.
See, Connery's the kind of actor that would do something like that. Like, he's kind of a character actor where he says, I don't feel like this character would say something like that, so I'm not going to say it. Like, that's why he retired from – that's why I assume he retired from – acting, was because he was getting, like, bad roles, or he didn't like the way movies were being made, or I don't know what the reason, real reason. I'm making assumptions here.
Yeah.
And sweeping generalizations. That's
fair enough.
Through this whole movie, even the first scene where he's talking to his boy, he's like, he's concise, he's trite, he doesn't really want to talk to this kid, he's got other things on his mind. But I guess at the end of the movie, he's free from his job now, so maybe he's a little more tender toward his wife and kid, but
I suppose.
I mean, really.
Yeah, really, that's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, the character that we've seen through this whole movie would not sit down and type that message. He would say, I'll see you at 0800 to go back to Earth, signed Lieutenant, what was his name, Trainer?
O'Neill. W.T. O'Neill.
O'Neill, that's right. Yeah, I watched it like a week and a half ago. I can't.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I just got done watching it like right before we started this, so it's fine. I guess that's it. I mean, do you want to go over any sort of final thoughts on it? I think that pretty much wraps it up for us, though.
Yeah, well, the ending was really sweet. Like the fight scene, because the fight took place outside of the base on the moon.
Yeah.
So, like, you have this 1/6 gravity, and I think they did it fairly well for, you know, the effects or whatever. Like, it really did seem like, you know, they were, like, floating around.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually when you fight in space, it's, like, real slow because, you know, people don't know what it's like in space. So you just kind of do it real slow motion because, you know, of course, gravity's.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of cool to see, like, him sliding down, like, the solar panel and the sparks flying.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, like, little stuff like that. We're like, oh, that's a pretty cool fight scene. And the chase scene through the barracks was pretty cool.
The chase was definitely the highlight of the movie for me. I thought that was great. And especially at the very end of the chase scene, I mean, spoilers for the end of the chase scene. Connery grabs the shotgun and essentially like shoots right, you know, over the head of the guy that he's finally cornered, and he's like, think it over or something. You know, he drops some sort of sweet one-liner about like, try me, I dare you. I dare you to try me after I ran you down this whole time. You know, something along those lines. But it's funny to me that you bring up that final kind of space battle, because that was a point where, and the fact, it's funny to me that you liked it, because that was the fact where, that was the point in the movie where I was literally laughing while I was sitting on the couch. I was like, this is comical. This looks ridiculous. They're clearly trying to. I did appreciate what you're talking about, because they did establish that the Io, the moon of Jupiter that they're on, only had 1/6 gravity of Earth. So I appreciated it not being completely in 100% slow motion. But after, you know, a scene as kind of badass as that chase was in the middle of the movie, that was so, you know, rapid fire and like quick moving, to kind of it just brought the movie to a complete crawl for me, because, you know, you have to, you know what's going to happen. Connery at one point leaps off of this, scaffolding down onto a lower level, and it takes him like 7 seconds to fall. And you're like, okay, I know he's going to land on him. Just freaking get to it already. You know, they like, and because they're in these kind of cumbersome suits, they can't even really do any damage to each other. Like, you can swing slowly and punch somebody in the gut, but it's like hitting somebody underwater. It's not going to hurt.
Right.
So I don't really know exactly what they were going for there. I just thought it was kind of ridiculous. But overall, I mean, I would say the action in the movie is good. It is definitely, you know, it's better. The entire movie is better than I thought it was going to be, so we'll put it that way.
Yeah, it was definitely the first half or so where he's like finding these clues and trying to find out what's going on. It's kind of a slow move. But there's definitely a payoff at the end with the action. I did like how, like you were saying, like if he had jumped, he would have been fine, because it's like jumping a curb.
Yeah.
On Earth, like jumping, you know, 200 feet with 1/6 gravity, just kind of like, all right, there we go.
Time. Yeah. All right. Well, that will pretty much bring us to the end of our review of Outland. Why don't you bring up the old Apple II and let us know what we're going to see next week?
The Deus Ex Machina, if I'm saying that correctly. It actually, it's an Apple II program. Yeah, we mentioned it last week. It actually picks the next movie for us. And let's give it a try. Oh, Ben, let's see if you can guess this next movie. It stars your fan favorite, Josh Hartnett, a grizzled Harrison Ford, and, wait for it, they're both cops. Give it to me.
Oh, it's got to be the one and only Hollywood Homicide.
You're absolutely correct, Ben Master P.
Fantastic. Well, if you guys would like, you can watch Hollywood Homicide and kind of listen along with us on our next podcast. I would definitely recommend doing that. It makes this entire experience that much more enjoyable for everyone. Speaking of making enjoyable experiences, email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com and let us know what you think of the show, your feedback and all that stuff. If you email us something that's not just excessive swearing. I will read it on the air, and you know, maybe we can get a little discourse going. So feel free, email us, notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. I'm going to try to figure out some way in the future to set up an area where you guys can leave voicemails for us, but I can't promise anything about that yet because I'm just completely unfamiliar with that technology. But I'm hoping that that'll be something that we can kind of look forward to in the future. So
yeah, we'll definitely we'll read any letters that we get on the podcast, because
yeah, especially in the beginning,
I'm sure they'll trickle in. So we'll read every single one we get.
Yeah, sure.
I guarantee it.
Okay. All right. You heard it here, folks. So why don't we just go back and forth real quick and just tell people where we can find our work on the internet. So Tyler Brand, where can we find you on the internet this week?
Yeah, I still edit and write for the Solar Sentinel. It's my blog. It's my personal blog. It's nothing big. I just did a big omnibus on the King's Quest series of computer games. If you check it out tonight, I put out a new book review on Parsifal or A Knight's Tale, which I've always thought would make a really good movie, but I don't think they're ever going to make it. It's so obscure. I also write for Geek Tyrant, a weekly article that I sometimes never do, and sometimes I do. You know, sometimes my job as a writer there kind of kicks in, and I say, all right, I'm going to write one this week. So
you can
find all my writing and ranting and everything there.
And that's called This Week in Comics, correct?
Correct, by Alan Treherne.
Yes, fantastic. For me, you guys can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. I also am a contributing editor and a writer for GeekTyrant.com. We just, you know, like we were talking about at the beginning, just came back from Comic-Con, so we've got a bunch of coverage there, so check that out. I also write reviews and some film news over at Filmonic.com, and then all of my reviews you can find at notjustnewmovies.blogspot.com, the host of this podcast and the kind of the namesake of it, if you will. I also... I forgot to mention last week, another spot you can find me writing is benpears.tumblr.com. That's T-U-M-B-L-R. And that's another blog that I have called Media Consumed, which basically aggregates all of my thoughts about various TV shows and stuff that I watch, too. So hence the name of the beginning segment of the podcast, Media Consumed, where we talk about TV. That's kind of where that came from. So,
what are the big reviews this month at Not Just New Movies?
I just did a review for Inception. Last night I put one up for Salt, and those are the two big ones right now. I guess the month is actually coming to a close, so there probably won't be much more this month. You know, I'll probably be reviewing The Other Guys, the new Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg film. But you know, that's for some newer stuff. This podcast for the not just new movies. So anyway,
sure.
Check that out, listen to it, read it, whatever, do your thing. And that would be awesome if you guys could support us by reading that stuff and, you know, leave comments or whatever. Let us know what you guys think of whatever we're doing. That's the only way we know how to change anything. So that will pretty much do it. I do want to mention one more thing. Music for our podcast is provided by George Turner and the Bandits, a couple good friends of mine. Their music can be found at gtbandits.com, and they're also on Twitter and Facebook, where you can find all of their stuff on their website. So gtbandits.com, check them out. They're really awesome. And special thanks to my co-host, Tyler Brands, for coming out and joining me on this podcast tonight. And we look forward to next week, where we review Hollywood Homicide. So check that out, and we will see you guys next time. I've got the blues. I've got the blues for you, yeah. I got the blues, yeah. I got the blues.